You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. It has been 10 years from the Here We Stay movement to the Light the Beam movement. It has been just a wild ride for the Sacramento Kings, their loyal fans, and the city of Sacramento. You may remember it was 10 years ago, a single tweet from a Seattle food blogger kicked off a fight between Sacramento and Seattle over the Kings. The team was suddenly and shockingly for sale. Would Sacramento be able to find a buyer and keep the team? Or would the NBA allow a new owner to move our beloved Kings to Seattle? This coming Sunday, KCRA3 will air a documentary called Game On, Fight for the Kings. It is a behind-the-scenes look at all of the twists and the turns of how Sacramento managed to keep the Kings. Here's a clip from the trailer.
Twitter changed the game because if there wasn't that one tweet...
So I hear that the Seattle Kings is officially a done deal. The Maloofs finally sold the ailing Sacramento team.
I looked at it and said, who the hell is this person?
Dana Falk's a food blogger. What? Is this a scam?
Wait, who? She's not connected to Sacramento or Seattle in any way. How would she know?
We found out that we have this NBA death sentence from a food blogger.
It went from game over to game on.
Well, since then, obviously so much has changed. We now have a downtown arena. The team is finally on the rise and a playoff contender, but the road here was very tough. Joining us today are KCRA sports anchor Michelle Dapper and KCRA investigative producer Dave Manicheri to tell us more about Game On, Fight for the Kings. Hey, you two. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for having us.
I have to say, when watching the documentary, I had to keep reminding myself, the Kings are here. You know, there's so much suspense. And it was a decade ago. Why decide to unpack all of this and revisit this story?
Well, it's been 10 years. I mean, it's sort of an anniversary. It'd be easy to say it was because of the playoff run, but we actually were working on this prior to the season starting. It was just, we saw that it had been a decade and, you know, KCRA, we've been doing more of these sort of documentary features. And so we decided we hadn't done a sports documentary. It was time. And there was nobody else to choose but Michelle. Then she was perfectly situated because she had started... she was up in Seattle before, or in Washington before she came down to Sacramento. So she had all the contacts in both cities.
Yeah, for me, it's kind of like a full circle moment because I did cover this saga up in Washington, and it was, you know, 10 years ago. You would ask anyone in Seattle or anywhere in Washington, the Sonics were back. And for me, I took the Sacramento job at KCRA, you know, a few months later. So for me, it was like bang, bang, covering this saga from two different sides of the coin. And man, I can't believe it's been 10 years. It went by fast.
It really did. And it's easy to forget the whirlwind that was really 4 months in 2013, you know, now that we're in 2023. Dave, can you give us like the Cliff Notes version of why the Maloofs were looking to sell the Kings?
It was a financial decision. And I mean, it's one of the things people don't think about, the fact that, I mean, it's a business. We like to think of it as our Kings, right? You know, the fans go, this is our team. But at the end of the day, it was the Maloofs' team. So if you look at what was going on in that era, their hotel in Vegas, the Palms, wasn't doing well. They had sold the alcohol distribution company that their father had started. It was like you could start to see the funds hemorrhaging. But prior to that, there were a lot of false starts before the 2013 sort of Seattle one that was like the pinnacle of it. But there were a couple of false starts, Anaheim, Virginia Beach. Yeah. Yeah, so that had happened prior to that. So the writing was kind of on the wall, but it had never quite happened. So I think everybody thought, it's not going to happen again, until suddenly it was like, no, the deal's done and they're going to Seattle.
Okay.
So we actually talked to the Maloofs. They're not included in the documentary, but we had a phone conversation with them. And, you know, they're actually, you know, they're still Kings fans. They knew everything about the Kings, the playoff run. But again, at the bottom line, they said for them, it was a business decision.
Mm. I want to go back to when you were reporting in Washington 10 years ago. That one tweet from literally a food blogger. Is like the craziest thing, especially when you look back. Take us back to how all of this unfolded.
Well, at that time, you know, Twitter was starting to take off, and very rarely did you have a tweet like that broke a story. He's like, we got to get this fact checked. Is this real? Like, what's going on? And then you see her handle, her Twitter handle, and it's like, who is this lady? And then, of course, you dig deeper, and then you find out that she's the daughter of a prestigious NBA agent who had Michael Jordan as a client. And then you think, oh, okay, maybe there's some mm-hmm. legs to this. This might be a real thing. And whether or not, you know, as you'll find out, you know, whether or not the Seattle group actually wanted that tweet to come out, I think, but that tweet benefited Sacramento in a lot of ways because yeah. it got the ball rolling to say, hey, we need to step in now or we're losing this team.
Yeah, because you have then Mayor Kevin Johnson, mm-hmm. who also played in the NBA. I mean, he really sprung into action. I mean, Dave, talk to us about how instrumental he was in keeping the Kings in Sacramento.
Very instrumental. I mean, you brought it up, the NBA, having played with the NBA, but he also had contacts with the business community. He could make a phone call directly to David Stern and talk. So it was kind of one of those things. It was, you know, we've had this discussion throughout the whole production process. If all of these players were not in place, Kevin mm-hmm. Johnson was probably the linchpin, but you remove any of the other players, you remove the folks that went to the city council meetings, the Carmichael Dave taking his RV, all the way to Daryl Steinberg being pro tem. Any of those pieces go away, this deal falls apart.
And you got to give credit to the Sacramento Kings fans, you know, packing, you know, being out in front of the St. Regis Hotel and chanting and showing that support, going to the city council meetings. That stuff is all the Twitter movement of the hashtag Here We Stay. That was really one of the first revolutionary movements on Twitter as far as trying to keep and rally to keep a team.
Yeah. As you were following this as a sports reporter, Michelle, I mean, how close did Sacramento come to losing the team?
The vibe up there was the Sonics were back. I mean, it was I remember the day and it was like, wait, what? The Sonics aren't coming. The Kings are staying. Like, what happened? I just remember that feeling of like, whoa, did Seattle just get blindsided in a lot of ways? And in a lot of ways they did.
Yeah,
because of that perfect storm and that perfect cast of characters that were able to come together and rally together to keep the Kings.
Yeah, because they went through that hardship in 2008, losing their team. And so they were hopeful that
yes.
they were going to get a new NBA team. And it just fell through.
It's funny. They while we have David Stern Parkway or walkway here in Sacramento, they said that they would have named David Stern as a sewage plant. So that is their feeling up there with David Stern. He's not well liked.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio, and we're talking to KCRA sports anchor Michelle Dapper and investigative producer Dave Manicheri about their new documentary called Game On, Fight for the Kings. It'll air Sunday night on KCRA. Okay, the arena issue is tethered to the Sacramento Kings staying here. That's why we have Golden One Center. And as we were talking about, I mean, that was also a very tough hurdle for Sacramento to just agree on mm-hmm. where it's going to go. Can you unpack that dynamic that was unfolding over the span of a very short time? We're talking like 4 months.
It was difficult because the arena discussion had gone back and forth. Arco, later Sleep Train, Power Balance, whatever everybody calls it, Arco. Arco was falling apart. It was, the ceiling was coming down. There were all kinds of issues with it. The NBA was not going to let the team stay if they didn't have a new arena. And we found out in our reporting that, you know, David Stern literally was like, we're not letting you keep the team unless it's not just a new arena. It's a new arena in downtown. And having to do that required a lot of like speed work yeah. just to get it through. And there were a couple groups, STOP and ION Sacramento, who had valid arguments. They didn't want taxpayers to have to pay for the arena at that point. So there was a battle. So as they were fighting to keep the team and fighting to find people who could pay for it, they also had to go through all of the environmental processes, the remediation of the downtown mall, which was all but vacant at that point. It was literally a battle on two fronts for Sacramento, and the arena was like one of the biggest parts of it, because if they didn't get that done, David Stern called, you know, to make sure that would happen. If that arena didn't happen, the Sonics were back because they had an arena deal already set in Seattle.
Yeah. Let's take a listen to part of the doc.
The arena would be the only infill development of its kind in Sacramento.
The way it was told to me through the city council and even the NBA that optics were very important in there. Because everybody came in with Kings jerseys, then the opposition can say, well, let the Kings fans pay for it. Let the Kings owners pay for it. We shouldn't have to.
The opposition was not anti-sports, I mean, view, but basically it was principled opposition to taxpayers and residents being saddled with a massive amount of debt to line the pockets of billionaires.
The confidence level here was high because the mayor and the city council had already signed off on the deal. The land was already put in place. The NBA was already saying all the right things about Seattle and trying to make the market more welcoming to the NBA again after everything that happened in 2008.
I mean, you just hear that drama. I mean, that is a lift in and of itself. But also, Vivek Ranadive, he also had to sell the NBA on his vision for a downtown arena. So we're going to listen to a clip of him describing, you know, a sexy Golden One Center, and then we'll unpack it.
The night before the meeting, they, you know, showed me this big board with a beautiful picture of the arena. And I looked at it and I said, you know, just like, sex it up a little bit, you know? More glass, more purple, you know, just make it look space age. You know, make it look iconic, you know, give me something sexy. David Stern, like, he knows everything. He came and he wagged his finger at me and he said, Ranadive, I know you put that picture together last night. So he knows everything, you know? So I don't know how he knew that.
That took me back to the opening of Golden One Center. I was reporting on it at KCRA. You were too. I interviewed Vivek Ranadive. And you take a look at what Golden One Center is now, and you pair that with the hindsight of the vision that he had.
Yeah. You, and one thing, credit to the Kings, the one thing that they've always done is they try to be pioneers and kind of like think outside the box and be innovative as part of that franchise. And when you hear Vivek say, sex it up, I mean, it's just so funny because, you know, if you know Vivek, it's like, okay, Vivek. But they sexed it up and look at it now.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone calls it the catalyst of downtown, and it's there.
And it goes beyond just really nice, sexy renderings. Dave, I mean, it's also good to know people in the legislature, and you dive into that as well. What role did the state legislature play?
It was key. In fact, the folks in Seattle, I think we have a soundbite in the documentary where the folks in Seattle say it really worked in Sacramento's favor to have the state legislature right there. It also worked in their favor to have Daryl Steinberg as the pro tem. At the time, he was the most powerful man in the state legislature. And so to have the ability to put those laws through to help speed up the process for that arena, again, it was one of the key factors that helped keep the team in town. If they didn't have the legislature and backing Steinberg, who was pushing those bills, it would never have happened. It really wouldn't have.
Yeah, and it's important to also kind of underscore that there wasn't necessarily a consensus among fans or residents. I mean, fans were kind of split over where they wanted the arena. And then you talk about Ion Sacramento. I mean, that's kind of an investigative arm of Sacramento residents who were very critical of the financial priorities that the city had.
Well, absolutely. And especially the parking revenue that was going to be how the city was going to pay for it. And nobody predicted a pandemic. And we don't go into this in the documentary, but it's true. I mean, nobody predicted that the pandemic was going to basically shut down the city. And so both the arena side and the city side didn't have the money to sort of back the bonds that they still have. They're just kind of getting back into shape. But it was. Ion Sacramento really delved into it. They issued a report. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's, you know, you've got both sides sort of looking at what are they going to do. At the end of the day, the arena got built. And even the folks at Ion Sacramento don't dispute that it's a beautiful building and it's a good thing to have right down there. How beneficial it has been in sort of the predictions that started back in 2013 versus what we have today, that's up for viewers to decide.
Yeah, absolutely.
What I love about the documentary is that obviously if you're a Sacramento Kings fan, like, you're here for it, right? Like, let's go down a very difficult, dramatic trip down memory lane. But you don't have to be a sports fan. I mean, this is very much like a kind of an investigative documentary that y'all put together. Michelle, from a sports perspective, when you completed the documentary, did you learn more about the team and the ownership and the dynamics that you didn't really know before you started?
I it's funny because I obviously know this city loves the Kings. I mean, that's no secret. The fan base is so passionate. And I knew the cast of characters that were involved, but I didn't know, especially like with Steinberg, I didn't know that all the, you know, the urgency that this had to get passed and done, and the way they went about it, and the local support as well from local investors that stepped up. You know, you got Phil Oates, you got Kevin Nagel. There's a lot of things that I didn't know there. I had seen previous documentaries done on this topic before, so I coming into it, I guess for this project, I knew about that, but before moving to Sacramento, I did not. And so I think that's where I learned, okay, this is why Sacramento kept the Kings.
Yeah. And Dave, from an investigative journalist perspective, you know, you're taking a critical lens at this. What did you learn? What surprised you? Because you've also been in Sacramento for many, many years.
Sure. And I was at KCRA covering this when it sort of unfolded. There was a lot that we didn't know, how involved David Stern was in sort of the machinations of keeping the team in town. There were a lot of things that we go into in the documentary that I did not know, and I don't think most of the city even knows, that went on behind the scenes that sort of reinforces Seattle's view of David Stern. Mm-hmm. But I think most people don't know how hard he was pushing to keep the team in town. And on top of that, just all of the for us, it was sort of the perfect sort of melding, because Michelle knew the sports side and I did the specials project stuff. So we had a great idea of trying to tell this story from the perspective of both cities.
Absolutely.
And so that helps to, I mean, I don't think anybody really knew the Seattle side of things. We sent reporters up there, but without like sitting down for like, you know, a couple hours with each of these people, you don't really get an idea of, you know, and how they looked at it. And the fact that like Sacramento doesn't hate Seattle and Seattle doesn't hate Sacramento, they actually ended up,
there's friendships that were made.
Absolutely.
And throughout the whole process. I mean, you know, you have one character that's actually friends to this day with another character on the other side. And it was a fun thing for me. I've been in TV 20 plus years now, and this is by far one of my most favorite projects I've done.
I really love that piece of going and getting Seattle's perspective, mm-hmm. because, you know, this journey can be very insular, you know, it can feel very Sacramento, but that's not the case. I mean, what the Sacramento got to keep with the Kings, Seattle lost, and right. Seattle still doesn't have a team. I mean, when you look back on that moment of when, you know, they're going to stay in Sacramento, I mean, what do you think that meant to Seattle even today?
I look back and I don't think Seattle ever really wanted to take the Sacramento Kings, because they had it done to them. So they know what it felt like. But at the end of the day, if you know, it's kind of like back to the whole saying of it's business. And if it's business and we're going to get a team, we're going to fully support that team. And it's sad because I do think Seattle did, you know, get their heart ripped out twice, not just once, but, you know, twice. And if you talk to a lot of the Sonics fans to this day up there, they're very hesitant on, you know, the NBA expansion rumors have already started, and the two cities that have been named are Vegas and Seattle. And many Sonics fans are very, like, hesitant to get on that train and say, oh, they're going to come, because I think they're going to wait until, as one of the fellows says in the documentary, you got to have steel in the ground before you're going to believe it. And in a lot of ways, I think there's a lot of parallels between these two cities. I mean, in a lot of ways, you know, things can be said with steel in the ground. Okay, Sacramento has felt that too with the soccer team. So there's a lot of correlation and little similarities between the two cities on the left coast.
I know both of you are probably, you know, letting out a big sigh of relief. You guys have done a lot of work, but have you already started thinking about a part two and what that could be?
Part two.
What you would like it to be?
We hadn't. it was just getting to the point of getting
just
here.
Just giving you another assignment.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah. No, we hadn't. I mean, I guess, you know, if we were going to do another part two, it would be, especially depending on how this season goes, it'd be looking at, you know, where they went after the team kind of got here. Because, you know, we have it sort of in the trailer, too. It's just like, you know, they just lost again and again and again and again for, you know, 17 years, 16 seasons.
Yeah.
So it's just, and so you know, it's easy. I've heard some people talk about, you know, it was a terrible ending to the season. But if you look at the years that they struggled, this last season was spectacular for them.
It was remarkable. So much fun to
set them
watch
up for this year. So.
Yeah. And they're celebrating their 100th anniversary of their franchise. Of course, that includes, you know, Kansas City and Rochester and elsewhere.
Omaha for a bit. I went and saw the Kings when I was a little kid in Omaha.
I vote going back the whole century for part two.
There we go.
Oh, we do.
Well, thank you so much, Dave and Michelle.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Great
Appreciate
job. It's a wonderful documentary. Dave Manicherry is an investigative producer at KCRA. Michelle Dapper is a sports anchor there. You can watch their documentary, Game On, Fight for the Kings, this Sunday night on KCRA. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.